15 men on a dead man's chest. Yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum. Drink and the devil are done for the rest. Yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum. Ahoy, mateys, and welcome aboard the good ship Lobot Lounge, where the crew of the Gentlemen Nerds be gathering for their forecastle council. Gathered here today, Bloody Mark Finn.
Mr. Tristan, the rope, please.
And Mickey Finn the Black.
Really bad eggs.
And, of course, Aaron Knucklebones de Arrive.
Oh, Captain Hook, what do you want me to do, Captain Hook?
Now be Quartermaster Griff, Quartermaster of the Liverpool Packet and the Brotherhood of the Crossbones, here to be a very special guest aboard this Gentlemen Nerds podcast, what be talking about all things piratical. So join us, hoist the grog, and drop an anchor. We have squalls ahead, and Davy Jones be waiting for them what don't obey.
So in case you listeners have not figured this out yet, tonight's episode, we will be talking about ninjas.
Delay that, delay that.
Robot ninjas.
I'm sorry. I meant pirates, of course.
Yes.
Yes. Historical pirates that would be inspiring fantasy pirates on movie and TV screens. Everything from Johnny Depp to Errol Flynn and every damn one in between. We'll also touch upon the great holiday known as Talk Like a Pirate Day on September 19th.
One of my favorite holidays of all time.
Aye. But taking us back to the beginnings of pirate entertainment, if I can, cast your eyes back and set your spy glasses to the rear, and let's talk about piracy. What is piracy? Knucklebones, what you say?
Piracy is when someone tries to basically steal some media electronically without actually... Oh, no, that's a different piracy.
Wrong pirates.
Yes, well, pirates, I have known about pirates, obviously, since probably I could talk, as we were just mentioning earlier that the Golden Age of Hollywood was in love with pirates and with the Golden Age of piracy.
Which, by the way, the Golden Age of piracy, in case you be wondering, is 1640 to roughly about 1720.
Wow, excellent. Yeah.
There are earlier documented cases of piracy, but they're kind of limited, you know, in terms of every culture that had a navy dealt with piracy. But when we think of the Golden Age of piracy, it's this real specific period that has to do with the age of the fighting sail.
Whereas the neoprene age of piracy was in the 70s.
No, in fact, yeah, I remember every time I would read, like, you know, well, the ancient Romans had to deal with, you know, the such and such pirates, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I forget they had pirates back then. They just didn't talk like Griff and didn't swing from sails and that sort of
they
thing.
Weren't
so,
Welsh.
Yes,
they weren't Welsh. That'd be the truth of it, maybe. Smartest way to be.
But by the way, so yes, yeah, so first point of trivia to get out. The wonderful personality that Griff is employing right now is what pretty much set the standard for what pirates sounded like and for the most part acted like, and that was the great actor
Robert Newton in 1950's Treasure Island from Walt Disney.
Which was, yep, 1950, and I always attribute it to Blackbeard, which is the same actor 2 years later in 1952, because that's the movie that I had seen most often with a pirate that would say, you know, arr and matey and her and that kind of thing.
And
of course, it's the same actor pretty much doing the same kind of character.
And I always equated it to Tom Baker in Blackadder, but, you know.
But beholden to this, Treasure Island, the book, be published in 1883 by Robert Louis Stevenson. Now, in the book, the words of Long John Silver, and you could lay to this, are you giving me affidavit that every word be true? If you be reading the words out loud, if you take Treasure Island and you have a night to yourself, hopefully, you could be reading the words out loud, and you take on this lyrical sing-song that Silver has in the book. It's in there, mateys. All you'd be having to do is to read the book. So Stevenson wrote this with this particular voice in mind, or at least some similar attribute of this voice. But Robert Newton happened to be grown up in the same area that Silver was supposed to be from. He accentuated his accent a bit more and did wonderful things like say, "Amen," when he said the prayer.
Yes, in fact, my favorite part from Blackbeard is... He's on the ship. He's captured the hero who's being held below. He's a doctor. He calls him Sarbones, and he's being held down below. He's got a pistol, and he says he's going to shoot any man that comes down there. So Blackbeard, of course, is on the top looking down into the hull, and he says, "Here I come, fearing no man. Blast away!" And then he grabs one of his pirate minions and throws him down into the hull. And you hear blam, and then Blackbeard laughs. And then he goes, "Oh, well, you'll pay for that, Sarbones." It's a fantastic scene. And so, of course, I fell in love with the Blackbeard character at that point. And thought, this is awesome. This guy is awesome. But that Blackbeard pretty much was my introduction to, before I'd read Treasure Island, before I'd seen Treasure Island, Blackbeard is what my first memory of a pirate.
Mark Finn, what about you, matey? When did you first set your deadlights upon a pirate?
I'd have to say that I first discovered piracy through Treasure Island. That was 70s Disney. You don't know about something until someone like tells it to you or shows it to you, and then afterwards you see it everywhere. Like once I saw Treasure Island, I started seeing pirates everywhere. And even shows where there's a piratical component, like Peter Pan, for example, you know, is a real good example. It wasn't too long after that I remember I saw Captain Blood for the first time, and I saw Captain Blood before I saw Robin Hood. The nice thing about Errol Flynn is that he is universally translatable. You don't even have to know anything about him to watch him swing his rapier overhead, and just go, That is so cool. So Errol Flynn was sort of for a while my version of that, and I was just thinking back on this because what actually sprung to mind as I was going back through memory lane wasn't all of the good stuff. It was unfortunately the pirate movie.
Christy McNichol be damned.
I was into it more for her than anything else. And it's not to say that there aren't some pieces of that thing that are pretty good. It's mostly the casting of the pirates themselves. The guy that was the pirate king in that is wonderful, but he's really it. You know, the only outside of Christy McNichol, the modern Major General song from Pirates of Penzance is about the only thing worth keeping out of that whole.
Yeah, in fact, my girlfriend used to love that movie so much. She had it on VHS. She would play it over and over. And that damn song at the end, "Give me a happy ending," that is burned forever, cursedly burned into my brain.
Yeah, you'd be lucky, says I, because I have the "Keep Pumping Blowing" song be my head. Oh, if I had a bit of lead in me brain to get rid of that song.
I never got to experience the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. But
what?
I was a fan. I was never a Disney kid. I just never...
Scupper that talk. To this day, you've never been on the ride?
Never, not once ever.
I love Pirates of the Caribbean ride. I love that ride.
I'm going to have to be with Mark on this one.
What? You've never been on the ride?
I've never been to the park.
Yeah, I've never been to Disneyland.
I've been to the Universal Park. I rode on the Jaws ride before they dismantled it.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to extend the plank here, folks.
I think it's time for our two men here to be doing a fine dance of ropes.
I can redeem myself.
Okay.
I can redeem myself. I was the only person in my graduating class who actually owned a copy of Roman Polanski's Pirates.
All right.
That's obscure enough. Yes.
You'd be having a stay in execution.
Well, and just to get me fully back in Quartermaster Griff's good graces, I went to a video store in the 80s, and of course, I got a lot of posters that way because they'd take the movie poster and stamp "Now on Video" and just send it out to shops. So I had that. But the thing that I actually made a point of introducing friends and girlfriends to, the movie that I showed to so many people during my tenure as the VHS hookup, was Nathan Hayes. Ah, now let's talk obscure, my friend. Young Tommy Lee Jones with that no trace of a Texas accent. Michael McKean, straight out of not Michael McKean, who was the blonde kid from Caddyshack. They were it was this really weird little movie. I don't even know how it got made, but it's the story of Bully Hayes, which is the Tommy Lee Jones character. Michael O'Keefe is the is his co-star.
Right.
Yeah, Michael O'Keefe, and I think that and Caddyshack were his only two movies.
Hey.
Nice.
But there's some really great set pieces in it, and it has to do with plantations, and I mean it's set in the kind of towards the end of the Golden Age of Cell. It's late 19th century. It's a really weird little obscure movie. It's got a couple of things going for it, and probably the biggest thing going for it is that the screenplay was by John Hughes.
Nice.
So, I mean, it's,
wow.
1983 film shot wow. in New Zealand. This was an early New Zealand production. And so it's got all that great, lush, weird stones and you know, pieces of... Set pieces, Griff. Set pieces.
There you go.
But if you haven't seen Nathan Hayes, it's a rare gem of a pirate film. See what I did there?
Wow.
Can you find it is the question.
So, Mickey, what about you? What's your intro into the world of piracy?
Due to my unique circumstances, I'm going to have to go with Princess Bride.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, yeah, well.
Okay. The man in black himself, Johnny Cash.
Dread Pirate Roberts, be a fine example of a Brethren of the Coast. Uh-huh.
And Sid Meier's Pirates Game.
Ah, now there be a fun
yeah.
game.
Which may, it may be the very first sandbox game that was ever actually produced.
Was it?
We can be late to that, yeah.
I'm not sure, but it could be.
Okay.
I know that.
All right, but here we go. Speaking of Treasure Island, here's my first. I have a series of questions that I'll throw out to the panel, but basically I'm mainly trying to stump our good quartermaster Griff.
Arr, now those of you at home that be ain't splicing the mainsail, get your drinks ready, because when I stump, you drink.
All right, here we go. All right, we mentioned Treasure Island. Excellent. Here's the first question. How many times has Treasure Island been made for film or TV in English?
In English. Film or TV. Well, I know Wallace Beery did it in the Silent Age. I know, of course, Robert Newton. Oh, let's see here.
Or silent is included. I meant more by English or British. Not we don't count foreign, you know, whether it be...
Is this a trick question?
All right. Charlton Heston did a fantastic portrayal of Long John Silver, directed by his son, Chuck Heston. What's his son's name? Another Heston. I can't be remembering that. All right. So, and with Christopher Lee as Blind Pew in that one. A very good performance.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. And Christian Bale, Batman himself, is young Jim Hawkins.
Yes. Very good.
All right, so let's see. Disney's Treasure Planet be a retelling of the tale, but in a sci-fi animated way. Even Eddie Izzard did a Treasure Island.
Yes, one of them is counted.
Yes. Let's see here. You know I'd be missing a few, so I'm just going to take a shot and say 8.
Oh! Drink away, it is 10.
Ten different versions.
From the silent era to modern day, and I'm not counting things that were like, I did not count Treasure Planet, which is a very, very loose, I meant actual, the Treasure Island.
That's why I was asking if it was a trick question.
Yeah. Ten versions. But I did count the Muppet Treasure Island, because that pretty much is Treasure Island. It just has Muppets in it. So yes, ten times.
And the most appealing thing about that story, mates, and you may lay to this, it'd be the character of Long John Silver himself, a rogue, a scoundrel, somewhat likable, but also very dangerous.
Yep.
The man could kill you with a crutch. He was horrible. They all called him Barbecue aboard the ship because he was the ship's cook. He was also the first, the quartermaster for Captain Flint. Flint, of course, being the most deadly, dangerous, dreaded pirate in the Seven Seas. We never meet him in the book. He's long dead by the time it starts, and it's Flint's treasure that everyone from Squire Trelawney to Jim Arkins go looking for upon that cursed beach. Now, Captain Flint had a crew, and that crew consisted of colorful characters such as Israel Hands and Black Dog and Blind Pew and even Billy Bones, who was the bosun aboard the Walrus. He's the one who starts the whole adventure by dropping anchor in the Admiral Benbow Inn and having the map with him.
Yes.
Yep.
So what's your favorite version of Treasure Island?
Oh,
I know that's tough because
it'd be tough.
I got Orson Welles, you know, as just, I mean, I love Orson Welles.
That is one of the versions in that 10. Yep.
I have to be going with Robert Newton.
I know.
In 1950.
I thought you might.
Only because of the powerful performance of Newton. Now, Heston's version is outstanding, and I love it. It's shot well. Music be by the Chieftains. It's a wonderful production of Treasure Island. Highly recommended. Richard Johnson is Squire Trelawney. I mean, this is a good cast.
Yes.
Isn't Oliver Reed in that one as well?
He's Billy Bones.
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
He's Billy Bones. But yes, highly recommended that version. But there's something about Robert Newton's sparkle-eyed rogue that while you like him, you can't trust him and you ne'er be turning your back on him and says,
aye. That's true.
And so popular was he that, yes, he did. He was cast as Blackbeard in the film production there that changed the story quite a bit, says I. But also, he recreated Long John Silver for an Australian production, Return to Treasure Island, where Long John Silver and Jim Hawkins once again journey to that cursed island because while they took all the gold, they be leaving the bar silver.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah, that is. I did see the version with Eddie Izzard in it, and it was good. I think he played a respectable Long John Silver.
But they did turn it around, didn't they? They made Squire Trelawney and sort of do a villain.
Yeah.
And they really kind of overemphasized the hypocrisy of those of the good guys in the film.
Yeah.
That were going to get the treasure. But I prefer my villains black hearted, but at the same time, there is some chance of redemption, because Silver's greatest fear was to be hanging by the neck till he was dead. He had a powerful fear of the gallows.
Yes.
So he was willing to make any kind of change he could in order for Jim Orkins to save his own hide when it comes down to Gallows Point.
And as far as I'm concerned, that's the mold from which most other pirates come from. It's just a phenomenal version of it.
So, gentlemen, a fortune, hands before the mast, what do you think the appeal of a pirate is? Why are pirates so entertaining to be listening to and watching?
Ooh, that's a good question.
That is a good question.
I think there's something inherently romantic about them. I like, and of course, there's a line from Pirates of the Caribbean where Captain Jack Sparrow says that the Black Pearl is freedom. Mm-hmm. And yep. There is something really appealing to most men, and I think a lot of women, the idea that you get to chart your own course, you get to make your own rules, you know. Mm-hmm. The idea of building a crew is like, you know, assembling a family, you know. And, mm-hmm. and there's something to be said for people who like to build things and be free. I think it, at its heart, it represents that that sense of wanderlust and freedom that we don't have anymore. We don't really, you know, we don't really have any recourse to go traveling about the world seeking our fortune.
And actually the inherent promise of that, there's also the adventure element. You know, not only are you free to go wherever you want, you go to mysterious places and discover things there, whether it be treasure or other wonders. I mean, yeah, it's the whole spirit of adventure.
I rewatched Pirates this afternoon, knowing that we were going to do this, and Pirates of the Caribbean, and that's
the first one.
That's Curse of the Black Pearl, and that is an absolutely beautiful speech that he gives, and it's not very long, but he talks about how, you know, it's not the keel and the sails. That's what a ship needs. That's not what a ship is.
Yep.
The ship is freedom.
Now, these romanticized pirates that Hollywood be giving us, we all know and love them. We can identify them. We like to root them as the underdogs. But I'd like like to take a bit of history back here in the 90s, and let's talk about the historical pirates of old of the Golden Age. Truly reprehensible beings they were. Yep. Horrible folk. In particular, one who struck fear into the hearts of men and women all up and down the Carolina coast. Edward Teach, a.k.a. Blackbeard. Mm-hmm. Yes, he be real, folks. And unfortunately for those who fell under his sword or pistols, he was a brutal man. Now, Blackbeard was also very smart. He knew the appeal of having a legend or having his reputation precede him, as it be. He used to light fuses in his beard and hair, so his entire head was engulfed in smoke, be like a demon from hell when he boarded the ship. He would always leave people alive to tell his tales. And of course, every time he raised his flag and people be knowing who it was, he would take ships without having to fire a single shot. People were so afraid of Blackbeard. Rumor has it that he used to fill a hold full of burning sulfur and have all his crew join him there to see who could stand hell the longest.
Oh, God.
And he would drink his rum from cups that he would pour gunpowder in and light a flame and then drink it up in front of his horrified crew. One particular night, he sat below deck with his mates, and playing cards at the table, he blew out the candles, took two of his ever-present flintlock pistols, held them under the table, and fired them at random. Crippling Israel Hands, his first mate. "Why did you do that, Captain?" was the question as he writhed up on the floor, and Blackbeard turned to him and said, "If I didn't kill one of you every once in a while, you'd be forgetting who I am." Truly an amazing man who ended his life just as a pirate would in the most bloody naval battle almost ever recorded on the seas. Captain Maynard from the British Navy would be sent him to hunt him down. And Blackbeard was at the Ocracoke Inlet off of North Carolina. And Maynard and his crew attacked. And Blackbeard fought back and drove him back to his ship. But he didn't know that Maynard had other men heading below deck. A huge fight ensued. The deck was awash with red. The scuppers were glut with rot. It was a horrible fight. Finally, Maynard and Blackbeard faced each other. Blackbeard, massive that he was, destroyed Maynard's sword with a single cutlass swipe, and just as he was about to go in for the kill, he was shot at least 6 times and stabbed about 4 more before the monster fell to the deck.
Wow.
Maynard chopped off his head and tied it to the bowsprit of his ship to prove that he had indeed killed the monster Blackbeard.
Wow.
Legend has it that the crew, when they saw their master fall, took his headless body and tossed it overboard, where it swam around the ship 4 times before going down.
Oh, Jesus.
So it was a chicken.
That is an amazing tale. Yeah, and it highlights, I think, the other aspect of why pirates are so popular is the it's a little simplistic to say that women like bad boys, but in point of fact, we all like outlaws. And the accounts of pirates were often filled with legend and lore and these wonderfully lurid tales that gave way to the penny dreadfuls. And this gave way to yellow journalism in America whenever we had our own version of pirates, the gangland murders of the 1920s and Bonnie and Clyde. And so this is all part of that tradition of how we all secretly want to get away with murder. We all secretly like to walk on the wild side. And I don't think there's anything more on point for something like that than tales of grim and bloody piracy.
Before Pirates of the Caribbean came out, years before, there's an author by the name of Tim Powers who wrote a book called On Stranger Tides. And I'd be really, really surprised if the writers of the original Curse of the Black Pearl hadn't read that, because it's very similar in tone, which, of course, they then adapted it with the movie.
Yes.
And Tim Powers got credit.
They actually took his actual novel, and that became the basis of the fourth movie, adapted
with Jack Sparrow and everything. Yep. And it also has my favorite rendition of Blackbeard in it, the original book. But all the pirate stuff that I like involve supernatural elements, whether it be the pirate themselves are just, you know, larger than life, like Paul Bunyan, or whether it is truly a supernatural, like The Curse, or the Fountain of Youth, or, you know, whatever.
Well, that be the truth of it. In fact, Knucklebones de Arrive here has a good point about the Pirates of the Caribbean films. Curse of the Black Pearl, of course, came out in 2003, followed by Dead Man's Chest in 2006, and At World's End in 2007. Bit of a lull between that and the next film on Stranger Tides at 2011. But now we're looking at another Pirates of the Caribbean film, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Can't wait.
Scheduled to come out in 2017. But, Knucklebones, you have a theory as to why these be so popular.
I do. We had been having this discussion. This goes back to when and if we are lucky enough to have Terry Rossio come onto the show. We will talk about this, I'm sure, but it became known as the Great Viking Pirate Debate on wordplay. I had said that I thought Vikings were cool, and he disagreed. And so we went back and forth talking about why I thought Vikings were cool, and he laid out a very compelling case as to why. The proof was that Vikings were not cool, and audiences, in fact, did not care for them that much. And, of course, he pointed as his primary source of evidence is that there's not really been, which is correct, any large grossing film, any very popular film or series of films or anything on TV except for recently. Vikings, we'll talk about that in a minute. But anyway, so we started talking about what made pirates popular. And we already touched upon a bunch of that stuff already about the feeling of freedom and adventure and the promise of adventure. And, of course, Hollywood spent decades glorifying them and turning them into heroes. But I argued to him that when somebody did to Vikings what Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio did with pirates, which was to perfectly infuse the fantasy element into the mythos, then I think that we would probably get an incredibly successful Vikings movie. Because historical Vikings are grim characters. They're murderers. They pillage. They plunder. They
rifle
go
and
take over.
And they have a beautiful mythology.
Right. And that's exactly, I think, the missing element. The Pirates of the Caribbean movies, I argue, would have not have been as successful. I think they would have been successful because the writing's top-notch. But I don't think they would have been as successful if you had taken all of the fantasy elements out of the movies. If it had just been historical pirates, even if Johnny Depp was still swaggering around as Captain Sparrow, which is a brilliant character and a brilliant portrayal, if you had stripped out all of the great, amazing fantasy elements of the curse and the undead pirates walking along. That's what brought me to the movie, by the way. In the trailers, you see the pirates walking along the bottom of the ocean as corpses, as zombies. And I saw that and I went, oh, I'm there. So there.
And a good friend of mine that some of you know, Claudia Smith, will just randomly say, gentlemen, take a walk.
Yeah.
And I'm so used to the gentlemen take a walk that I didn't realize until today when I rewatched it, he doesn't say gentlemen.
He says lads.
No, he says gents.
Gents, ah.
Which is what I always refer to us as.
You're right.
So I thought that was funny. It's like, gents, take a walk.
So yeah, without those elements, and then later movies, of course, the amazing Davy Jones.
Yes.
And the curse, the Flying Dutchman and the Kraken and all that. I mean, again, what they gave us was just the most beautifully realized fantasy version of pirates that anybody could ever have wanted.
And
it paid off in spades. I mean,
everybody brought their A game to the first movie.
Yeah.
To the following as well. But the first movie is the Raiders of the Lost Ark for this generation.
That's absolutely correct.
Okay, so here we go.
It's beautifully filmed. It's beautifully edited. It's beautifully written, it's beautifully acted, and the score has just as memorable a song.
Yes, it's beautiful.
As the Indiana Jones theme.
This is what I call movie alchemy.
Yes.
When it works, it's gold. But it's rare. It is hard to get all of those
perfect
elements.
Star.
Yeah, and the sequels. just like Raiders, the sequels couldn't live up to the first one because of that perfect storm of alchemy.
All right, so here we go. So this leads us to our second trivia question.
Grog's up.
Which we pretty much have already discussed here. But what is the highest grossing pirate movie of all time?
Oh, it has to be Curse of the
Pearl. It has to be. Actually, I would wonder if Dead Man's Chest wouldn't be a higher grossing simply because people came back for more and told their friends and saw it on video, et cetera, et cetera, and were more excited about Dead Man's Chest than they were. It certainly shouldn't have been World's End. That was a bit much. Little convoluted, that one. I'm going to go out on a limb and I'd be saying Dead Man's Chest, the second Pirates of the Caribbean film.
And you do not have to drink, listeners. That is correct.
It's not Ice Pirates?
It is not. The highest grossing pirate movie of all time was Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, with a worldwide gross of $1,066,179,725.
Now, the whole not drinking rule would be more like a guideline than actual rules. If you have a mind to, mate, please.
In fact, drink. We encourage you to drink. But no, what an amazing franchise that has become, and of course now one of the other trivia questions, but it's going to be so easy that I'll just throw it out now. Which actor has gone back to play a pirate more than any other actor in film history? And of course now with the next movie coming out, it is definitely Johnny Depp, who has returned as a character of Jack Sparrow.
There should be a captain in there.
What do you mean return? Okay. I mean, did you see him in interviews afterwards? He basically stayed the character for years.
Yeah. No, it is an amazing, every now and then we come across amazing cinematic characters. And that is one. What I love it is it is not based on anything that was already existing in literature and comics or whatever. Obviously, he was inspired by various different elements. In fact, Keith Richards is what he claims he based his portrayal on.
But he figured that pirates were the rock stars of their era. So.
and that was a great call. Which in fact, also a little interesting tidbit here. Keith Richards was also the face that they used for the Goblin Blix in Legend. But anyway, just throwing that out there. Next time you see Legend, then you go, damn, that goblin looks familiar. Yes, it's Keith Richards.
We almost didn't get the Keith Richards version of Jack Sparrow because the studio kept wanting to change it.
Yes, in fact, I'm hoping if we are so lucky and fortunate enough to get Terry Rossio, he will explain a lot more about that entire process. But he said he knew from the very beginning when he was watching what Johnny Depp was doing that he just went, wow, this guy, wow, this is why they pay him the big bucks. Yeah. This is why they pay him.
Everything from the costume to the hair, working with the makeup artists and putting it together, it was Johnny Depp who created the character. In fact, he kept saying over and over again, trust me, when the dailies would come out and the producers were very nervous about what they were seeing, they weren't exactly, is he gay? What's he doing? Why is he talking that way? What be afflicting him? Trust me, what he keeps saying. And of course, the Academy Award nomination for his performance as Captain Jack Sparrow put all that to rest.
Yep.
I got to say something about Pirates of the Caribbean. Well, first of all, you guys should know, I mean, and I think you do anyways, I don't have any kind of creative or not creative, a critical filter when it comes to pirate movies. I don't.
Okay.
I love them all. Even when they're flawed, I love them because they're not always perfect, you know. And I mean, like I'm a guy. I own a copy of Cutthroat Island. You know what I'm saying? I'm that guy.
Not as bad as it.
No,
as people
of course
say.
It's
not.
Not
as bad.
And,
all right. Well, then
clearly
you,
I'm not
Mark.
Alone. But this,
let me ask you, Mark. What was next to the question?
All right.
What was the biggest pirate movie bomb of history?
Gee, I wonder.
Well, I think, honestly, it was Roman Polanski's Pirates.
I think it was, because they spent more money on Pirates.
They spent $40 million on that movie, and it didn't gross $2 million.
All right, so that's your answer?
Yes.
Wrong!
Oh!
It was Cutthroat Island, which lost $89 million.
Oh, well, yeah, I forgot.
It cost close to $100 million to make, and it only grossed $10 million.
Yeah, they did. I forgot that Rennie Harlan is the guy that likes to pump up the thing. And this is not a bad thing. You know, both Polanski and Rennie Harlan, and there's other people as well, you know, they are of the opinion that, you know, when you're doing a pirate movie, well, you got to build a new ship, and it's all got to be to scale. And so, you know, right away, you're in the movie for $15 million because people don't just build Spanish galleons anymore. You can't just go to the Spanish galleon store.
I believe in Cutthroat Island, because of a storm, they lost the ship. Yeah. They had to rebuild the damn thing.
Yes.
And they lost their leading man and had to replace
them. Polanski's ship is still afloat. You can actually visit it as a tourist attraction. But
wow.
Yeah, and it's a full-scale Spanish galleon. But yeah, Harlan lost stuff, and there were accidents on the set. You can actually see in the movie Matthew Modine getting clocked in the head with a powder keg during an explosion. It's pretty cool.
What a train wreck.
And I do love Frank Langella as Black Dog.
Yeah,
he's fantastic.
Langella's great, and you get young Orlando Bloom as one of the Cabana boys, and of course the idea of the map. You know, that's just such a great...
It's tattooed on his skin.
One guy's got it on his head. It's on a plank of another one. There's three pieces of map on three different mediums, you know. There's some really fun stuff. And actually, the action pieces in that are really good. But here, to me, and you guys have all said kind of variations of the same thing, this is, to me, why Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl is what it is. It's not, and I'll go ahead and say this might be the last real postmodern film that Hollywood has made. Not counting Tarantino, because I think he's still kind of not Hollywood. But it's not one pirate movie. It's all pirate movies.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally a pirate movie about other pirate movies. You know, if you watch historically the oeuvre of pirate films, they all work around an action piece or a set piece. And sometimes it's ship-to-ship combat. Sometimes it's the age of the fighting sail. Sometimes it's the romance. You know, there are some of the pirate movies from the 1950s, like The Buccaneer, which is far more swashbuckling romance than pirate action. Well, Pirates of the Caribbean has all of that, and it's held together with the one element that we have never seen before in a pirate film, which is the supernatural. This is almost like a discussion. It's almost like every pirate movie's greatest hits.
Yeah.
With magic. And so,
stitched
together with scenes from The Ride.
And you're
stitched together with scenes from The Ride.
And those scenes from The Ride are beautifully done, and they're seamless. And I love the dog with the keys in his mouth. That's just my favorite thing. But the... you said that it's the Raiders of the Lost Ark for this generation, and I agree with that because Raiders did, in fact, do the same thing. It's not it's not a cliffhanger film. It's a film about cliffhangers with magic and a very Humphrey Bogart in the lead role instead of some good-looking guy who can barely act. So that's what makes, I think, Pirates, that's what elevates it. And consequently, it's not fair because the other three movies – are unfairly compared to that one.
Right.
And it's sort of like, you know, it's not fair because the first one was this wonderful discussion, and the next two are having to tell a linear story.
Yeah. Well, in fact, I agree with Griff is that the box office of Dead Man's Chest demonstrates beyond a shadow of a doubt how popular Curse of the Black Pearl was, because that's really, people were coming back for that experience again. That's what they wanted. They wanted lightning in a bottle twice. It made so much money. I actually think it's a fun film, but how do you compare it to something as masterfully done as Curse of the Black Pearl?
But they had so many great set pieces in Dead Man's Chest that you hadn't seen yet. The cannibals on the island and the bone cage rolling and the mill wheel battle upon the rolling mill. And
the mill wheel battle is brilliant.
So well done. But it's, is it over the top? Aye, that'd be the truth of it. Is it unbelievable? You betcha. But it's so much fun, and that's the point. You're having a good time, just like being on the ride.
The only problem I have with that is that they went a little bit too much into Looney Tunes.
Absolutely.
Every now and then, Johnny Depp could have been playing the coyote.
mugging for the camera the whole time. Yeah. Incidentally, bit of trivia, when you next time, well, Mark and Mickey, when you do go to Disneyland, which I highly recommend, and ride Pirates of the Caribbean, and you go through the treasure cave, there in the treasure cave is the actual chest of Aztec gold Pirates of the Caribbean, sitting right there in the treasure cave.
Oh, that's awesome. I think the biggest reason why the second movie doesn't work as well as the first movie is in the first movie, Captain Jack Sparrow is in full command of the plot from the second he meets Will Turner. From the second he meets Will Turner, the plan starts forming.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second movie, he is completely rudderless for the first two acts. It's not
until he's running.
Yeah, he's running. He's scared. He doesn't know what to do. And as much as I love the movie, and of course, repeated viewings, I love it more. That wasn't the Jack Sparrow we signed on for, because the first movie sort of promised us that we were going to get this master architect. And instead what we got was cheap subcontract labor.
But you know what? I forgive them because of the wonder that is Davy Jones.
I forgive them.
And the Flying Dutchman and all the crew.
I will forgive them for the wonder that is Hector Barbossa.
Yes.
He is truly my favorite part of these films. Even above Davy Jones and Johnny Depp and all of that, I love Tubby Watchin' Barbossa.
Not only that, his entrance at the end.
If
you go back, could do a film class on this, because if you go back and watch that, listen to the music, look at the editing, the script, the delivery, everything is pitch perfect for the perfect entrance.
When he comes in at Dead Man's Chest, the reaction that they had upon seeing him was genuine, because they didn't know he was going to show up.
Oh, cool.
They actually filmed their reaction of seeing Barbossa step out. And throughout the film, you see things like Jack the Monkey. And when they go to Tia Dalma's place to trade Jack the Monkey for the information about the spot, there on her bed are a pair of black boots that the monkey jumps on and looks at and squeals at. It's Barbossa. He's laying right there. She has the body.
Yeah.
Oh, that's genius. That's so good.
It's brilliant stuff. It's brilliant stuff. I hope one day that somebody can do that kind of treatment for Vikings, which, by the way, in a future show, we will have a future show about Vikings, just because that's one of my favorite things to talk about.
And if we do, you'll be having to talk like a Viking the whole time.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, but that means that would kind of sound like this. And it's so funny, because when I was working in Oslo, working among Vikings, they, of course, don't sound like white. Norwegians do not sound like that. That is their version of basically a country bumpkin, what we would hear as a hazy, like, howdy, y'all! When they hear the, hello, my name is Sven, those are people that come from the northern part of Norway or Sweden. Like, but again, country folk have the, hello, my name is Sven kind of sound to their voice. When Norwegians talk, they have an accent, but it is not at all what we would think of, you know, the Swedish chef kind of, bjort, bjort. That's not, that is not what they sound like at all. But anyway, I forgot to ask this trivia question at the very beginning. Here we go.
Hanker's up.
What was the very first pirate movie ever produced?
Take a gander.
And there's bonus points if you can tell me who made it.
Ooh, all right. It had to have been either...
The Great Train Robbery.
Close. No, it had to have been either Edison from his studio or maybe... I'm going to say Treasure Island, that there had to have been a silent early version of Treasure Island that had been done.
Oh, wrong. There was an early version of Treasure Island. I think it was 1910.
Everyone drink.
But this one was The Pirate's Gold in 1908 by D.W. Griffith.
Very
first pirate movie. There we go.
Something I've not seen, I can say. I'm going to hunt that down if it even exists still.
Yeah, I'm sure somewhere you can find, probably YouTube. But speaking of Mark mentioned his Nathan Hayes. My favorite obscure pirate movie, and I never tire of watching it. I can watch it over and over and over again, is the amazing pirate movie starring Robert Shaw called Swashbuckler.
Ooh.
With Robert Shaw as playing just an amazing pirate. He doesn't talk like that, but he definitely has an accent. He sounds like an Irish Irishman, which I believe he was. And his cohort, his right-hand man, his first mate, is a young, very athletic, incredibly handsome James Earl Jones. And the movie is a wonder. It is a wonder. Peter Boyle is the villain.
That's right.
Oh, my Lord, this movie is filled with just the most amazing shenanigans. Of course, it's historical. Meaning there's no supernatural elements in it. But it's just, they were clearly having so much goddamn fun when they were making this movie. Jean-Yves Mougeot is the daughter, the young woman who starts to, of course, fall in love with the Robert Shaw character. We have Beau Bridges playing a bumbling sort of a lieutenant that serves the evil lord played by Peter Boyle. And it's great. It's just there's nothing about this movie that is not enjoyable. Who's the gentleman? Seven Up, never had it, never will.
Oh, yes, he played Baron Samedi in Live and Let Die.
That's correct. Baron Samedi, he played in Live and Let Die. It plays a character who's, of course, he's the same character in every movie that he does. This laughing, deep-voiced, jovial, and he throws knives. That's a shtick. He's got this two bandoliers full of knives, and he pulls the knives out and starts hurling them hither and thither and yon. And it's great, and you can find it. Swashbuckler. It's very hard to find, but it is brilliant. It's one of my favorite pirate movies.
You know, the pirates outside of the realm of the Golden Age and the historical pirates, they do show up from time to time in our modern interpretations of pirates, apart from the Captain Phillips types movies, where you have the piracy on the high seas. Who remembers the movie The Island?
Vaguely.
Remember the poster had the hand coming up out of the water with a knife and the pirate tattoo on the hand.
Yeah.
Peter Benchley, author of Jaws.
Michael Caine's in that, right?
Michael Caine, yes. Right. A modern-day pirate movie.
Nice.
And Harrison Ford did that romantic comedy where he was be stuck on an island with Anne Heche. What was that?
God, what
10
was
days,
that
20 hours, and no money back. I don't know what it was called. It was something like that. It was, but there were pirates in that as well, and I think Anne Heche has a bit of a humorous comical line when Harrison Ford says, "Go, go, there be pirates," and she says, "Pirates? Is it arg?"
Nice. God, poor Harrison Ford. Yes, I do remember that movie.
Now, speaking of talking like pirates, I know we're all really having a good time listening to me rant on, and I suppose you're wondering to yourself, how in the world could I be doing the same thing? Well, here's how. Every year on September 19th, there's a wonderful holiday that we can all partake in and play. It's that time in September when grown-ups remember that sea dogs still know how to play. It's when wenches are curvy and dogs are all scurvy and a software patch covers your eye. It's called Talk Like a Pirate Day, mateys, and everyone can play. Here's how it happened. Yes, a story, a pirate story. So drop anchor and listen up. On June 6th, 1995, two grand adventurers, let's call them Captain Slappy and Old Chum Bucket, real name John Bauer and Mark Summers, were playing racquetball one day. And as they played racquetball and hoisting their rackets and hitting the ball toward each other, they were responding with "Arr!" and "Have at thee!" and "Here's to the mizzen mast!" Having a wonderful time after their workout, they said, there should be a day, aye, that'd be the truth of it, there should be a day when every man, woman, and child could be talking like a pirate. So they decided to pick a day. Mark Summers picked the date of his ex-wife's birthday, the only one he could remember, September 19th, and they pitched it to humorist Dave Barry in 2002, who wrote a huge column on it. And it has taken off in spades. There's an international Talk Like a Pirate Day website where people from all over the world send pictures and parties, and they have great gatherings. Talk Like a Pirate Day is a wonderful opportunity for you to let out your inner swashbuckler, says I. And in fact, we'd like to do a little bit of a lesson. Those of you listening, those of you watching, that's you, Aaron.
Okay.
All right, so repeat after me. Arr.
Arr.
Better? Now, all you'll be having to do is to punctuate your sentences with things like this.
excuse me, I'm sorry, but our meeting has been delayed for the day.
No, no, I'm talking like a pirate day. You don't say that. You say, "Avast! We've been bleeding belayed!"
Ooh, I like it.
You see?
Yeah.
Something like that. Very simple.
Like
very
like
simple.
It.
Yeah, you just be peppering your speech. Now, you be careful, though, because you don't want to offend people, but there are pirate pickup lines you may be using as well. For example, hey there, honey, you want to see me yardarm? Or avast, you scurvy wench. Come home with me, I'm barnacle free.
This reminds me of my favorite pirate joke.
Arr, okay. Fire away.
Pirate captain comes into a bar with a steering wheel sticking out of his pants, walks up and orders a drink. The bartender says, I don't mean to be rude, but you appear to have a steering wheel sticking up out of your pants. And the pirate captain says, I know, it's driving me nuts.
Drink.
Oh my God.
Drink, everyone, drink.
Even at one point, Avast, the antivirus software, redid all of their dialogues as Talk Like a Pirate.
Yes.
And it was only available for one Talk Like a Pirate day. And I still have
even
it on one of my laptops.
Even in the Book of Faces, you could set all your dialogue to be pirate speak to this very day.
I do that every once in a while, yes.
But on Talk Like a Pirate Day, laptops, they're benches that God gave us for wenches. And sales, they're not low prices to pay. It's when timbers are shivered and lilies be livered and every last buckle is swashed. So I urge you all to check out the Talk Like a Pirate Day website and partake. Let out your inner pirate, I say.
Give him free rein and let him roam as he wishes.
Aye, that's the truth of it, mate.
Now this reminds me of my favorite pirate joke. Pirates sailing along on the ocean. One of the crew comes running up to the captain and he says, Captain, we've spotted a man-o-war on the horizon. Headed our way. The captain says, Arr, bring me red shirt so that the lads don't see me bleed.
Arr.
He says, aye, aye, Captain. The guy comes running back. Oh, no, our mistake, Captain. It's not one man of war. It's five man of wars, and they're all headed our way. Arr, get me my brown pants.
Oh, it's only funny because he shit himself.
That's,
that's the only thing that makes that funny.
Oh, my lord.
Yes, indeed, he do. Well, it looks like the spyglass up on the top of the crow's nest be indicating that the Lobot Lounge be hoisting the anchor and sending us overboard to Davy Jones. I'm afraid so. But the fair winds will blow again, and we'll gather once again here at the Lobot Lounge. And until that time, I suppose it's time for one last go-round. Mark Finn, what's your best pirate advice?
Oh, best pirate advice. Never drink runny grog.
Arr, that'd be the truth of it. No one wants that. Mickey Finn, give us your best pirate farewell.
Remember, the weevils and the biscuits are added protein.
Arr, nice. That'd be the truth of it. Historically
it.
Accurate as well.
I like it.
And Knucklebones, let's have a pirate curse.
Oh, a pirate curse. May your enemies finally corner you and see you dance on the gibbet.
Ah! And in parting, these few words of pirate lore. Well, Powderhorn James, he had rum in his veins, regardless of Sunday or sin. For my poor mate James, he had lead in his brains, and he kept himself three sheets to wind. Now a surgeon he offered to save James the bother, the pain from that fair ball of junk. No, thank ye, me brother, I'd rather the other, a pardon to keep myself drunk. Farewell, mate!
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by the East India Company.
You need need more water, my friend. poor Joseph is sounding so hoarse over here, and he's just about done with his water, so.
Thanks for indulging.
Yeah, no, that was great, man.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun.
If you have to have an episode about pirates, if you want to have a pirate pretty much hosting the pirate episode.
So what do we say happened to Joseph?
We can say that Joseph was finally released after we basically paid the ransom. That's right.